Chapter 16. Zino said,
"Yes, I will tell you who I am, Emmanuel, but I will not let your world return. Mine is better. Herb Asher leads a much happier life. Ribus is alive. Linda Fox is real.
But you did not make her real. I did. Do you want back again the world you gave them, with the winter, its ice and snow over everything? It is I who burst the prison. I brought in the springtime. I deposed the procurator Maximus and the chief prelate. Let it stay as it is. I will transmute your world into the real. I have already begun. I manifested myself to Herb Asher when you kissed him. I penetrate your world in my true form. I am making it my world, step by step. What the people must do, however, is remember. They may live in your world, but they must know that a worse one existed, and they were forced to live in it. I restored Herb Asher's memories and the others' dreams. That's fine with me. Tell me now who you are. Let us go, hand in hand, like Beethoven and Goethe, two friends. Take us to Stanley Park in British Columbia, and we will observe the animals there, the wolves, the great white wolves. It is a beautiful park, and Lionsgate Bridge is beautiful. Vancouver, British Columbia, is the most beautiful city on earth."
"That is true. I had forgotten."
"And after you view it, I want you to ask yourself if you would destroy it or change it in any way. I want you to inquire of yourself if you would, upon seeing such earthly beauty, bring into existence your great and terrible day, in which all the arrogant and evildoers shall be chaff, set ablaze, leaving them neither root nor branch. Okay?"
"Okay,"
Emmanuel said.
Zina said, "We are spirits of the air who of human beings take care."
"Are you?"
he said, because he thought, "If that is so, then you are an atmospheric spirit, which is to say, an angel." Zina said,
"Come, all ye songsters of the sky, wake and assemble in this wood. But no ill-boding bird be nigh, none but the harmless and the good."
"What are you saying?" Emmanuel said.
"Take us to Stanley Park first, because if you take us there, we shall actually be there. It will be no dream."
He did so. Together, they walked across the verdant ground among the vast trees. These stands, he knew, had never been logged. This was the primeval forest.
"It is exceedingly beautiful," he said to her. "It is the world." "Tell me who you are,"
Zina said.
"I am the Torah."
After a moment, Emmanuel said,
"Then I can do nothing regarding the universe without consulting you.
And you can do nothing regarding the universe that is contrary to what I say,"
Zina said.
"As you yourself decided in the beginning when you created me. You made me alive. I am a living being that thinks. I am the plan of the universe, its blueprint. That is the way you intended it, and that is the way it is.
Hence the slate you gave me."
"Look at me," Zina said.
He looked at her and saw a young woman wearing a crown and sitting on a throne.
"Malkuth," he said, "the lowest of the 10 Sephiroth.
And you are the eternal, infinite and Soph,"
Malkuth said.
"The first and highest of the Sephiroth of the Tree of Life."
"But you said that you are the Torah."
"In the Zohar,"
Malkuth said,
"the Torah is depicted as a beautiful maiden living alone, secluded in a great castle.
Her secret lover comes to the castle to see her, but all he can do is wait futilely outside, hoping for a glimpse of her. Finally, she appears at the window, and he is able to catch sight of her, but only for an instant. Later on, she lingers at the window, and he is able, therefore, to speak with her, yet still she hides her face behind a veil, and her answers to his questions are evasive. Finally, after a long time, when her lover has become despairing that he will ever get to know her, she permits him to see her face at last. Emmanuel said, thus revealing to her lover all the secrets which she has up to now, throughout the long courtship, kept buried in her heart. I know the Zohar. You are right. So you know me now, Ansof, Malkuth said. Does it please you? It does not, because although what you say is true, there is one more veil to be removed from your face. There is one more step.
True,
Malkuth, the lovely young woman seated on the throne wearing a crown, said.
But you will have to find it.
I will. I am so close now. Only a step, one single step away.
You have guessed, but you must do better than that. Guessing is not enough. You must know.
How beautiful you are, Malkuth. And of course, you are here in the world and love the world. You are the Sephira that represents the earth. You are the womb containing everything. All the other Sephiroth that constitute the tree itself. Those other forces, 9 of them, are generated by you.
Even Kether, Malkuth said calmly. Who is highest?
You are Diana, the fairy queen. You are Pallas Athena, the spirit of righteous war. You are the spring queen. You are Hagia Sophia, holy wisdom. You are the Torah, which is the formula and blueprint of the universe. You are Malkuth of the Kabbalah, the lowest of the 10 Sephiroth of the Tree of Life. And you are my companion and friend, my guide. But what are you, actually, under all the disguises? I know what you are, and he put his hand on hers. I am beginning to remember. The fall, when the Godhead was torn apart.
Yes, she said, nodding. You are remembering back to that now, to the beginning.
Give me time, just a little more time. It is hard. It hurts.
I will wait.
Seated on her throne, she waited. She had waited for thousands of years, and in her face he could see the patient and placid willingness to wait longer, as long as was necessary. Both of them had known from the beginning that this moment would come, when they would be back together. They were together now, again, as it had been originally. All he had to do was name her. To name is to know, he thought, to know and to summon, to call.
Shall I tell you your name? He said to her.
She smiled, the lovely, dancing smile, but no mischief shone in her eyes. Instead, love glimmered at him, vast, extensive love. Nicholas Bulkowski, wearing his Red Army uniform, prepared to address a crowd of the party faithful at the main square of Bogota, Colombia, where recruiting efforts had of late been highly successful. If the party could swing Colombia into the anti-fascist camp, the disastrous loss of Cuba would be somewhat offset. However, a cardinal of the Roman Catholic Church had recently put in an appearance, not a local person, but an American, dispatched by the Vatican to interfere with CP activities.
Why must they meddle? Bulkowski asked himself. Bulkowski. He had discarded that name. Now he was known as General Gomez. To his Colombian advisor, he said, "Give me the psychological profile on these cardinal harms."
"Yes, Comrade General."
Miss Rice passed him the file on the American troublemaker. Studying the file, Bulkowski said, "His head is up his ass. He's a spinner of theology. The Vatican picked the wrong person."
"We will tie harms into knots," he said to himself, pleased.
"Sir,"
Miss Rice said, "Cardinal Harms is said to have charisma. He attracts crowds wherever he goes."
"He will attract the lead pipe to the head," Bulkowski said, "if he shows up in Colombia."
As a distinguished guest of an afternoon TV talk show, the Roman Catholic Cardinal Fulton Statler Harms had lapsed into his usual sententious prose. The moderator, hoping to interrupt at some point in order to achieve a much-needed commercial information dump, looked ill at ease. "Their policies," Harms declared, "inspire disorder, which they capitalize on. Social unrest is the cornerstone of atheistic communism. Let me give you an example." "We'll be back in just a moment," the moderator said, as the camera panned up on his bland features. "But first, these messages." Cut to a spray can of Yard Guard. To the moderator, since for a moment they were off camera, Fulton Harms said, "What's the real estate market like here in Detroit? I have some funds I want to invest, and office buildings, I've discovered, are about the soundest investment of all. You had better consult." The moderator received a visual signal from the show's producer. Immediately, he composed his face into its normal look of sagacity and said, in his informal but professional tone, "We're talking today with Cardinal Fulton Harmer." "Harms," Harms said. "Harms, of the Diocese of Archdiocese," Harms said, miffed. "Of Detroit," the moderator continued. "Cardinal, isn't it a fact that in most Catholic countries, especially those in the Third World, no substantial middle class exists? That you tend to find a very wealthy elite and a poverty-stricken population with little or no education and little or no hope of bettering themselves? Is there some kind of correlation between the church and this deplorable situation?"
"Well," Harms said at a loss.
"Let me put it to you this way," the moderator continued. He was perfectly relaxed, perfectly in control of the situation. "Hasn't the church held back economic and social progress for centuries upon centuries? Isn't the church, in fact, a reactionary institution devoted to the betterment of a few and the exploitation of the many, trading on human credulity? Would that be a fair statement, Cardinal, sir?"
"The church," Harms said feebly, "looks after the spiritual welfare of man. It is responsible for his soul, but not his body." "The communists enslave man's body and man's soul," Harms said. "The church..."
"I'm sorry, Cardinal Fulton Harms," the moderator broke in, "but that's all the time we have. We've been talking with Freeze Man from Original Sin," Harms said. The moderator glanced at him.
"Man is born in sin," Harms said, totally unable to gather his train of thought together.
"Thank you, Cardinal Fulton Statler Harms," the moderator said. "And now this."
More commercials. Harms, within himself, groaned. Somehow, he ruminated as he rose from the luxurious chair in which they had seated him, "somehow, I feel as if I've known better days." He could not put his finger on it, but the feeling was there. "And now, I have to go to that little rat's-ass country, Colombia," he reflected. "Again, I've been there once, as briefly as possible, and now I have to fly back this afternoon. They have me on a string, and they just plain jerk me around this way and that. Off to Colombia, back home to Detroit, over to Baltimore, then back to Colombia. I'm a cardinal, and I have to put up with this? I feel like stepping down."
This is not the best of all possible worlds, he said to himself as he made his way to the elevator. And TV hosts of daytime talk shows abuse me.
Libere me, Domine,
he declared to himself, and it was a mute appeal. Save me, God. Why doesn't he listen to me? Harms wondered as he stood waiting for the elevator. Maybe there is no God. Maybe the communists are right. If there is a God, he certainly doesn't do anything for me. Before I leave Detroit, he decided, I'll check with my investment broker about office buildings. If I have the time. Ribas Rami Asher, plodding listlessly into the living room of their apartment, said, I'm back. She shut the front door and took off her coat. The doctor says it's an ulcer, a pyloric ulcer, it's called. I have to take phenobarb for it and drink Maalox. Does it still hurt? Herb Asher said. He had been going through his tape collection, searching for the Mahler Second Symphony. Could you pour me some milk? Ribas threw herself down on the couch. I'm exhausted. Her face, puffy and dark, seemed to him to be swollen. And don't play any loud music. I can't take any noise right now. Why aren't you at the shop? It's my day off. He found the tape of the Mahler Second. I'll put on the ear speakers so it won't bother you. Ribas said, I want to tell you about my ulcer. I learned some interesting facts about ulcers. I stopped off at the library. Here. She held out a manila folder. I got a printout of a recent article. There's this theory that... I'm going to listen to the Mahler Second. Fine. Her tone was bitter and sardonic. You go ahead. There's nothing I can do about your ulcer. You can listen to me. I'll bring you the milk. He walked into the kitchen and he thought, must it be like this? If I could hear the second, he thought, I'd feel okay. The only symphony scored for many pieces of rattan, he mused. A ruta, which looks like a small broom. They use it to play the bass drum. Too bad Mahler never saw a Morley wah-wah pedal, he thought, or he would have scored it into one of his longer works. Returning to the living room, he handed his wife her glass of milk.
What have you been doing? I notice you haven't picked up or cleaned up or anything.
I've been on the phone to New York.
Linda Fox?
Yes, ordering her audio components.
When are you going back to see her?
I'll be supervising the installation. I want to check the system over when it's all set up.
You really like her,
Ribas said. It's a good sale.
No, I mean, personally, you like her.
She paused and then said,
I think, Herb, I'm going to divorce you.
Are you serious?
Very.
Because of Linda Fox?
Because I'm sick and tired of this place being a sty. I'm sick and tired of doing dishes for you and your friends. I'm especially sick and tired of Elias. He's always showing up unexpectedly. He never phones before he comes over. He acts like he lives here. Half the money we spend on food goes for him and his needs. He's like some kind of beggar. He looks like a beggar. And that nutty religious crap of his, that the world is coming to an end stuff, I can't take any more of it.
She fell silent, and then, in pain, she grimaced. Your ulcer?
My ulcer. Yes, the ulcer. I got worrying about...
I'm going to the shop, he said. He made his way to the door. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Herb Asher. Leave me here and go stand around talking to pretty lady customers and listening to high-performance new audio components that'll knock your socks off for $500,000.
He shut the door after him and a moment later rose up into the sky in his fly car. Later in the day, when no customers wandered around the store checking out the new equipment, He seated himself in the listening room with his business partner.
Elias? I think Ribas and I have come to the end.
Elias said, What are you going to do instead? You're used to living with her. It's a basic part of you, taking care of her, satisfying her wants.
Psychologically, she is very sick.
You knew that when you married her.
She can't focus her attention. She's scattered. That's the technical term for it. That's what the tests showed. That's why she's so messy. She can't think, and she can't act, and she can't concentrate.
The spirit of futile effort, he said to himself.
What you need, Elias said, is a son. I saw how much affection you have for Manny, that woman's little brother. Why don't you...
He broke off.
It's none of my business.
If I got mixed up with anybody else, I know who it would be. But she'd never give me a tumble.
That singer?
Yes.
Try.
It's beyond my reach.
Nobody knows what's beyond his reach. God decides what's beyond a person's reach.
She's going to be galaxy famous.
But she isn't yet. If you're going to make a move toward her, do it now.
The fox, Herb Asher said. That's how I think of her. A phrase popped into his mind. You are with the fox, and the fox is with you. Not Linda Fox singing, but Linda Fox speaking. He wondered where the notion came from, that she would be saying that. Again, vague memories, compounded of... He did not know what. A more aggressive Linda Fox, more professional and dynamic, and yet remote, as if from millions of miles off, a signal from a star, in both senses of the word. From the distant stars, he thought. Music and the sound of bells.
Maybe, he said, I'll emigrate to a colony world.
Ribas is too ill for that.
I'll go alone.
You'd be better off dating Linda Fox, if you can swing it. You'll be seeing her again. Don't give up yet. Make a try. The basis of life is trying.
Okay, Herb Asher said. I will try.